everybody, on 88.1. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. You know, many symphony orchestras have composers in residence who write music and who work with the artistic staff to organize programs of contemporary music by other composers. And likewise, many theaters have playwrights in residence. Like their musical counterparts, these playwrights write plays and work with the theaters on educational programs and other projects. Well, the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra has had its share of resident composers over the years, but it appears that it's the first orchestra in the country to merge theatrical and musical traditions by engaging a playwright in residence. Her name is Dee Dee Bali, and she has written and is directing a symphonic play that explores Tchaikovsky's state of mind as he composed his Fifth Symphony. Aaron Alsop will lead performances of Dee Dee Bali's new symphonic play called Mad But For Music this weekend, and Dee Dee Bali joins me in the studio. Good morning. It's great to meet you.
You too, Tom.
So what's a symphonic play?
Well, a symphonic play is a dynamic synthesis of three elements. It's the symphonic orchestra on stage with the maestro, the conductor, and the third element is theater. It has a cast of live actors who are fully scripted, like in a small Broadway play. They're fully costumed. There's theatrical lighting. It's staged like a play. And so you have this, and they're in front of the proscenium. We have the playing area that, and every time we do one of these symphonic plays, the orchestra is moved back a few more inches or feet, which means that I think we're doing a good job. So we share the stage with the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra and Maestro Alsop, and then this theater. It's a triad of performing arts that's happening at the same time, all woven together. So a symphonic play, it has excerpts of music of the composers whose life were, particular story of his life were exploring. And
so you've done 8 of these by my count, I guess. And this, I have counted. That's okay. And, you've taken up Beethoven and Mozart and Mahler and Wagner in various iterations. What is it that makes good fodder for a symphonic play, an interesting symphonic play?
Well, I think the first thing is the maestro. The initial impulse from the particular composer we're going to look at comes from Marin. And I think we have to hit all the greats. And then each of them has a particular story or an angle in their life, and that's what I go out and research and find, that makes fantastic fodder, as you say, for a symphonic play. So, for instance, with Shostakovich, Notes for Stalin, which was debuted with the BSO in November and originally premiered in Philadelphia, it was a story about the making of the Fifth Symphony, of what Shostakovich endured in the 1930s under Stalin's reign of terror as he was preparing to write the Fifth Symphony. And in the case of Tchaikovsky, it's also his Fifth Symphony. But it was an interesting creative challenge because there is no built-in story, if you will, about the making of the Fifth Symphony.
So in other words, Shostakovich, there was a particular political, there were political exigencies that were important to the writing of that particular piece and his fears of, being caught and even imprisoned. And he was
exactly.
Writing a very fine line with the government and with the political leaders at the time. Tchaikovsky, not quite as specific, but what was Tchaikovsky's state of mind as he was composing his Fifth Symphony?
It was 1888 when he decided to embark on his Fifth Symphony. And he had just come home from a very successful tour of Europe conducting his own music. And he really should have taken a rest at this point, but he came back and he was on fire with the idea of writing his Fifth Symphony. And the theme of it, he decided, would be fate. Well, I thought that was very curious as a playwright. I thought, why would a composer who 10 years previously had written a definitive symphony on fate, which he claimed was a triumph over fate, why would he go back and revisit this same theme 10 years later? So that was my question really creatively. If you think as a writer, I thought, well, why would he do that? Why would I do that? Why would anyone do that? So I just read a lot and did a lot of research, and I started finding little bits and pieces here. Prior to his coming back home after the tour, he had stopped in Aachen to visit an old friend of his named Nikolai Kondratiev. And he was dying, and his friend had asked him to sit with him bedside. And he sat with him bedside for 3 weeks as he lay dying. And I found in his letters to his brother, Modeste, He talked about how this man lamented and wailed and fought against his fate, and he could not die a peaceful existence. In fact, he couldn't even die. Tchaikovsky finally had to go home. And I thought, you know, that may have been the catalyst or the seminal moment.
He was sort of confronting his own mortality.
Yes, because he was that kind of a person. He was constantly taking what, like all the great artists, whatever was in front of him, he was facing his own mortality. And I think he came home and realized that there were elements in his life that he had not really faced or looked at. And then the wonderful thing about research was I found chronologically that the four, you know, seminal events that happened in his life happened 10 years earlier as he was writing the fourth symphony about fate.
Mm-hmm. And what were those four? He got married. That was one of them.
That's right. There's the fated link between his marriage proposal itself and the writing of Eugene Onegin. He was writing
big opera.
The opera at the time. He was writing the love letter scene. When a letter arrived for him at his home from a woman he had no recollection of, declaring his undying love for him. And he took this as a great sign from fate, because he had also told himself that year, and it's in his letters, this is almost verbatim, that he would marry anyone that year who would have him.
And of course, he struggled with his own sexuality because
right.
he wasn't a heterosexual guy, but he got married because that's sort of what you did. In the
well, he was worried about his reputation and
right.
his music, and he wanted to stop the rumors. So he got married that year.
This is the background, the context with which you wrote this play that will be done along with the Fifth Symphony. Now, will Marin and the orchestra play the entire Fifth Symphony, or does it get interrupted with scenes, or how does that work?
That's a good question, because the symphonic plays have taken two formats. The first part of the program is the symphonic play, in which musical excerpts are woven throughout it judiciously. There are excerpts from the fifth, excerpts from the fourth, from Eugene Onegin.
So we get a little sampling of Tchaikovsky's music as we sort of delve into what his personality was like.
Right. And also what happens is the music that's chosen really reflects the psychological and theatrical moment that's happening, so it's all woven into the story. Mm-hmm. So when it resonates again, or we hear an echo of it again in the symphony, we may hearken back the audience to that time of in his life. And he himself said, you know, my life is in my music. And so then there's a brief pause. There's a wonderful ending as he finishes the fifth, and he has his final soliloquy or monologue. And then Marin lifts the baton, and we go into the fifth.
And we play the whole piece.
We play the whole piece. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So it's really a wonderful format, because it really allows both elements to shine fully.
Didi Bali is the composer in residence at the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra and the writer and director of Mad But For Music, a symphonic play that gets its premiere this weekend with Marin Alsop and the BSO on 88.1. It's Marilyn Morning, and I'm Tom Hall. So Mad But For Music comes from a letter that Tchaikovsky wrote, saying that it literally he would have been driven mad had it not been for his refuge, as it were, that he found in composing.
That's right. It was one of his letters to his patron, Mrs. von Meck, who was Russia's richest widow. He did say, I would have gone mad had it not been for my music.
What's different about writing for this venue, this concert venue with a full symphony orchestra on the stage, and writing for a theater?
I think what it is it allows me to explore as a playwright the story in the music and the music in the story.
What about the organizational cultures of a symphony orchestra and a theater? Because they're different animals. You know, I've worked in both, and there are different sensibilities, different priorities. Has that been tricky to negotiate those dynamics?
An orchestra is an extraordinarily efficient organism. They go down to the minute. And they come in and they play, and there's no wasted time. So how that impacts in terms of the, not the creative process, but the rehearsal process with the actors and myself, because I then work as the stage director, we would probably have 6 to 8 weeks to mount and explore this script and put it together.
Were you in a theater?
Were we in a theater? What happens is I get the script out after I've cast the actors, and I Skype with them 2 or 3 times ahead of time to help them create their characters and to talk about things. but also for me to edit very quickly and do rewrites very quickly. And they have to come to the first rehearsal completely off book and ready to go.
Meaning their part is memorized.
Memorized.
Whereas if they were doing a play in a theater, if they were coming to center stage, it would be a weeks-long process. And the first week or two, they would be still reading the script from their script.
They'd be sitting around a table like we are now, which is a wonderful process, but we don't have the time for that. The rehearsal process is so condensed, and then we come in, we have 4 full days before we have a dress rehearsal. So when we hit the ground running, I describe it as a combination between the Olympics and the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah.
You know, when the gun goes off, we're out of the paddock,
right,
and there's no stopping. I come with it staged like an NFL coach. I have figured out everything on paper, and I say, this is just a blocking blueprint. We're going to do this very quickly. Then we'll start making adjustments and getting your feedback and whatnot.
And Tchaikovsky in particular is a composer who writes big, meaty, lush, romantic tunes. I wonder if there's a danger that any actor, regardless of the kind of presence that she or he has on a stage, can easily be dwarfed by this, you know, this enormous profundity that's coming forth musically. Is that a challenge for the people in the cast?
It is a challenge, but I don't say anything to them about that other than maybe how they might end a scene to sort of hand it off. I also use underscoring. For instance, in this particular symphonic play, there are three.
So meaning that they're speaking while music is being played underneath.
Right. There's a monologue, I call it après suicide. That's after he's, you know, tried to kill himself, and his brother Modeste says, why did you do it? And he's taking care, you know, he's in a foot bath and whatnot. And there's a beautiful little bit of underscoring. I try to use the horn section from the fifth. There's another moment when I have to telescope time so quickly in these symphonic plays. We go from the proposal with Antonina and Tchaikovsky, and then there's a wonderful bit of music from the fifth that sounds like a wedding march, and through, you know, staging, they're very quickly married. There's a beautiful moment at the end with underscoring. It's the transformation moment when Tchaikovsky hears this young Italian street singer and the Ponte Vecchio in Florence, and this is historically accurate, and his monologue is against this music.
You're a former journalist as well, I mean, as a playwright. So you know, you've filed for the New York Times and other publications, so you know what it means to, you know, to research a story, to find out the facts. But part of your research here is listening to the music, isn't it? It's listening to the Fifth Symphony of Tchaikovsky and saying, what does this music give us as an insight into Tchaikovsky's personality, as well as knowing the facts of his life, and say, what do those facts tell us about the music that he's written? So it goes both ways, doesn't it? And
that's
you
right.
Learn, I guess, equal amounts from both, or,
yes,
or one
I learned,
more than the other.
That's a great way of putting it. I learn equal amounts for both, and both inspire and inform the other. I used to just do my research and then allow myself to listen to the music because I wanted to get, you know, I have voluminous research. I have enough for, you know, a 7-part PBS miniseries by the end. But with this particular one, with Tchaikovsky, I allowed myself early on in the research, I listened to the fourth and fifth constantly as I was researching, sort of like letting it get under my skin
without
knowing.
Get it in the DNA.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, interesting. Well, it's going to be a lot of fun, and I really appreciate your coming by and telling us about it and break a leg.
Well, thank you.
Dee Dee Bali is a playwright in residence for the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra and the writer and director of Mad But for Music, which explores the life of the great Russian composer Pyotr Ilyich Tchaikovsky. Performances are Friday night at the Music Center at Strathmore in Bethesda, and on Saturday night at the Meyerhoff here in Baltimore. Maren Alsop conducts the BSO tomorrow night and Sunday afternoon as well, in a program that includes not only Tchaikovsky's Fifth Symphony, but music by Kevin Putz and Shostakovich, too. We've got a link to more information at wypr.org/Maryland Morning. It's Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. Lots more coming up after the news, but first, time now for the Environment in Focus with Tom Pelton.